Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings to everyone listening to Open Rebellion. We're live on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Richard Cameron, and my co-host tonight is Dina Leichnitz, and we have a great guest this evening. We'll get right down to it. I would just like to point out, however, that this is a companion platform for MadisonCPC.com. Madison's, as in James Madison, MadisonCPC.com. So while you're listening, Stephen, go over and check out that on the web. That is the web platform, the content platform, where we have a host of terrific writers that cover politics and breaking news and straight news without a bias, without a spin, lifestyle, sports, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of great things on there, so it's a good destination. So do that. Check us out on Facebook. Madison CPC on Facebook, and like us over there. We will appreciate it. Our guest this evening is J.D. Rucker. He is a blogger, a Christian blogger and author, and he is also a businessman. We'll talk a little bit about some of the businesses that he is involved in, and he has, like most of it, well, a lot of us, I guess, one statistic I noticed that 67% of the electorate is not thrilled to death about the choices that we have in this presidential election or the two-party system as it exists, and neither is J.D. Rucker. And so he's going to talk a little bit about his new Americana party. We'll learn about that as well. But let's go ahead and bring him in right now. Good evening, J.D. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
A pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you this evening.
Good. It's a pleasure to be
here. Yeah, terrific. Well, let's go ahead and get started. And I'm going to basically start off with a few questions that help me navigate, find out which direction I really want to go with an interview. So, J.D., here's a couple. Favorite rock band? Just off the
nothing,
top of
nothing
head.
Like a cold interview. Let's go with Bon Jovi. Old Bon Jovi,
okay.
Not new Bon Jovi.
Old Bon Jovi. Is there a distinction?
Oh, absolutely. Not even
okay.
Close.
All right then. What was the big hit? Living on a Prayer. So you dig
Living
that.
Living on a Prayer was one of them.
I was more
along the lines of Wanted Dead or Alive. I think that was the one that really, really touched me in high school, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, sports team.
Prior to this terrible situation with Colin Kaepernick and all of this stuff, I was a big OU fan when it comes to college and a big Dallas Cowboys fan. Now I am no longer a football watcher.
Well, okay, but you did mention the Dallas Cowboys, so then I've got to ask you this question. the team is considering allowing Tony Romo to come back and take over his old slot at quarterback, and this is a guy who suffered a broken back, and I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems like beyond insane, but what's your take on that?
Richard, I would have, Tony, I think, has a good heart that crumbles and breaks apart under any amount of pressure. I wouldn't have put Romo as the star of the team for the last decade. You know, first choke, fine. Second choke, you know, so be it. Third, fourth, seventh, 53rd choke. At that point, at some point, you have to cut your losses, and they haven't. So, as far as this year, we have a rule in both my company and my house: we don't talk about football if I'm around, because I do still have the urge. I grew up loving the game, loving the sport, and so everybody's sensitive. I couldn't tell you that Romo was injured. I try to avoid anything that has to do with football, because it's kind of like, I wouldn't say a heroin addiction. I wouldn't know anything about hard drug addiction. But if they have to go through anything like what I'm going through, the football withdrawals in the middle of football season, I feel sorry for them.
Well, then we better not talk about the Rams coming back to L.A. then, huh? Okay.
As an Orange County guy, so yes, having football coming closer to me is not going to make it any easier. Who knows? Maybe they'll wisen up. I am fully welcome and available to forgive them if they come to their senses and start actually, you know, doing the right thing versus. That's a whole other issue. We could have an entire show about the ills of football.
All right,
but let's not.
Well, okay then. Yeah, let's do it. I'm up. Okay, here's one. Where did your parents meet?
You know, it's sad that I actually don't know that answer. it's important. Well, now here's let's be clear that my entire. You know, the until I can remember, like, my entire prehistory is kind of dark to me. Like, I learned a lot of things when I was older. My mother is Filipino. My father was in the Air Force and stationed in Manila. So they met somewhere along the lines. They met. I came along, and when I was 8 months old, they brought me to America. And so I've never known the place where I was born, but I've never actually asked how did they meet. I just know that somewhere along the lines they made me.
Well, we know where they. That was the question. Where did your parents meet? So we know they met in the Philippines. Do you know? Does the family keep track of the relatives over there on that side?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, okay, good.
It's most of them, thankfully over the. Over the years, the majority of them have actually moved over. So most of them now live in San Diego, some in Florida, very large family. The vast majority has, and it was a very large family. So when I say majority, we're talking probably 30 people in my family have moved from the Philippines to the United States to find prosperity, all through legal immigration, as it should be.
Absolutely, absolutely. My next door neighbor's Filipino, and San Diego is a big hub for mm-hmm. them. And he's got lots of relatives down there in San Diego. So, okay, here's one for you. Have three kids. Philosophy as a parent.
Let them grow.
No,
it's a great question. Let them grow and guide them along the way. Keep God centered on them and trust. You know, the hardest part for me as a parent, I have two daughters, and one of my oldest daughter, you know, is she's in high school. She's beautiful, and you know, when she wants to go out and do things, it's been hard for me to trust those things. I went to high school, and my golly, I wouldn't have wanted any of the boys to be thinking the way that I was thinking when I was in high school, or any other high school boy for that matter. Mm-hmm. But faith has allowed me to trust. With that said, I also do get shielded. So to be funny, she heard this recording. She went on her first major date the other day, and they made sure not to tell me until she got back. So little not because I would have done anything. I guess they were fearful of me, you know, doing similar to what you're doing now, giving an interview and asking, but instead of who's your favorite rock band, you know, what are your thoughts of Reagan? You know, the, I don't tell me if you were on a desert island and it was just you and Calvin Coolidge, would you sacrifice yourself so that he could survive? You know, there's only one answer to that. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I hope nobody ever asked me that question. I'm not looking forward to it. Not at all. Okay, well then, let's talk about, you had a business, Hasai Incorporated, and I noticed that one of these sites that, you know, just basically describes businesses said it was in the tree nuts business. What are we talking about here? Walnuts, almonds, pecans?
No,
or is that complete disinformation?
My enemies are already targeting me. No, both. Let's go back about a decade, and I worked for a firm, a marketing firm, moved up in it to the point that I was given ownership, and part of that, we were allowed to form a new company as well, one that got into some of the more, you know, at the time, new age media, such as this crazy stuff called Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
Oh, yes.
You know,
right.
They knew nothing about it. I did, so we formed Hasai for that. In 2011, both companies were sold. I was signed to an agreement to stay on for 2 years to make the deal work, and I did. When my 2 years was done, I found a partner, and we started a brand new business in 2013, and that's what I do today. It also does marketing, specializes in cars, car dealers, car
dealer authority,
manufacturers,
right?
The automotive marketing powerhouse. The reason behind it is we had great jobs. You know, both me and my partner had some incredible jobs. Made a lot more money back then than we do today. But what it didn't afford me or him was the ability to do what we really want to do, which is, in this case, follow our dreams, whether it's from a faith perspective, from a political perspective, from a family perspective. When you own a business, as we can do in America, and you're able to take that business and take advantage of the freedoms that we have, it can translate into personal freedoms. Now, that's not to say that we don't work hard, but there's a difference between – there's a certain liberty that you get when you have your own company that is harder when you're an employee. Now, there's also disadvantages. There's responsibilities that we must take. So it's not something where I'm going to recommend, hey, everybody quit your job and go start a tree nut business, okay?
No, nothing wrong
with tree nuts. And I know nothing about that business, but if they want to do that, they could. But it does.
Well,
I can say that,
you know,
I had my job before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I would caution people with reference to owning certain types of businesses like franchises and some of these little stores that I see around here in my community where if you step inside the place, you figure out right away that the person who owns it is having hell of a time finding responsible people to work for them, and they are like that business is like a ball and chain. They, you know, spend practically every waking hour there, you know, trying to keep it from you know, going down the drain. That kind of a self-employed situation is not too great. And I have the greatest deal of respect and empathy for folks like that at the same time.
Sure.
Because then they have to deal with the government as well. It's almost like a no-win
so
situation.
Much easier. Well, you know, it's a no-win-yet situation. Hopefully we can change that. It would be nice if the government allowed Americans the ability to follow their dreams, to not be so burdened by government itself to where they could actually have a life, fulfill their dreams, follow their ambitions, and not be attached to it in a way that's detrimental to them, to their families, even in many cases to their community. So, but that's a whole other issue that we may end up talking about today.
How does digital marketing impact the process of my shopping for a vehicle? In terms of what you do with these dealers.
The beauty of it is, and this is something that I think is important for everybody to understand. When it comes to digital marketing and when it comes to promotions, there's bad and there's good. You know, bad. Mm-hmm. We get to see that all the time. That's your Viagra emails. That's the the spam. Okay. What we do is we want to make sure that if somebody wants to buy a new Ford Mustang, they should be able to find that new Ford Mustang on the internet, whether it's through search engines, social media, whatever, you know, targeting today.
Pop-up ads?
It's sad. Say, oh, gosh, no. So don't get me going. No, there's a difference. I think what it's funny because that's what I think when people hear about digital advertising, the first thing they think of is that this is about getting those
like
flashy banners
people.
Or pop-up ads or tracking people, and there is that negative side to it, but not with what we do. Ours
well,
is very
so
much geared towards
that.
Being found. Well, and it's funny because
I'm
this
so
is exactly
that
precisely.
That was,
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No. I was just going to say that was what you described was exactly sort of my mental frame of reference with reference to digital marketing, and then by extension the pop-up ads that come up, and I don't even know how the hell I get them because I thought I had my computer set in such a way as to reject them, but they certainly there's no shortage of workarounds. But no, I'm glad to hear that it's more of a customer-driven process rather than the other way around.
It's been an educational process for us, educating dealers to understand that the best way, if you really want to, I fought a long battle that I think we finally did win back in. I know that the battle was won. I just don't know what my contribution was, but hopefully it was substantial. This was back in the late 2000s, the late aughts, when there was this pushback against the internet and against putting pricing on. And I made it my mission to convince people, look, it behooves you to be transparent. You know, the good old days of people not knowing how much their car is worth, how much your car is worth, how much all this information, they have it all. So accept that and embrace it and be better than your competitors who are still trying to play games. You know, and what we found was that dealers have, today, shopping for a car today is just so much better than it was even a decade ago, which was better than it was a decade before that, which, I don't even know how people bought cars in the 70s. It was such a strange industry. Today, there's a lot of dealers that no longer even hire quote-unquote car salesmen. They hire representatives who are there to just guide them. They basically say, look, you got all the information. Tell me I know where the blue one is. it's almost like customer service rep at Best Buy. Oh, that's in aisle 15. Let me show you.
Exactly.
So that level of transparency, turning cars into a commodity and making it to where profit margins are based upon volume and to where customers are made by transparency and quality service, that's the transition that we're making. And here's the funny part, is that this description, what I just described to you, is exactly what's happening or what has yet to happen so far, but hopefully will happen in politics. Right now, political advertising is all based upon, getting those 30-second ads on television or getting the banners and the pop-ups, to follow you around. If you've gone to one of the party's candidates or if you've gone to your senators, they're all about the tracking. They're all about data. They're all about – no, it doesn't have to be. The way that it should be and the way that would be most effective, most appealing to people is if you made your stances known, very clearly, very transparently, and you led with those. In other words, if somebody does a search, if I'm working for say a pro-life candidate, okay,
mm-hmm.
and somebody does a search for you know whatever pro-life, anti-abortion, pro-life movement, they go to search engines or they go to Facebook and they've expressed interest in, you know, they've followed Life News or Life Site News or any of these other pro-life groups. You can put your message as a candidate or as a party or as a in front of these people, whether on search, social, all these various meetings. You don't have to go out and email blast them every 10 minutes saying donate to me, you know, breaking news, you know, Hillary just did this or oh my gosh, we're going to, the world's going to end if you don't send me $5. No, forget about that, you know, forget that.
Boy, I get a lot of those.
Focus
I don't
on
even know
issues.
How I get them, but I get them.
Well, you get them.
You know,
because,
that
because
makes that makes a great deal of sense. It does.
It does, and
yeah.
it's how we're going to make this work. But that's a whole other story as well.
Well, it is. It is, and I want to dig a little deeper into that when we come back from the break, and we'll be back just in a quick moment here with J.D. Rucker. You're listening to Open Rebellion Radio. I'm Richard Cameron with Dina Leichnitz, and we're just taking a quick promotional break. We'll be right back.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Open Rebellion is back, and we're here with my guest, J.D. Rucker, and Dina Leichnitz, co-host. And so I always ask this question, too, because I think about this a lot myself. How would you describe your personal political DNA?
Here's the toughest part. Because it's changing, and I'm not talking about the DNA itself. I'm talking about how to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be you could say, oh, well, I've always been very conservative, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? Conservatism as a brand, as a word, has been shifted. It's describe as conservative is no longer necessarily conservative. You could say, well, you know, I believe that my DNA is that of believing in liberty. Okay, that's great, except does that mean that you're a libertarian? You know, well, no, I didn't say that. I said I believe in liberty. Well, libertarians believe in liberty. You know, do you believe in the liberty of being able to, you know, have an abortion? That's a liberty. So
mm-hmm.
So that's changed. And then you can go on any of these various labels. So answering the question really comes down to this. It's I believe in an originalist perspective. mm-hmm. the Constitution. That's in my DNA, and that originalist perspective is still, you know, has the unnecessary but apparently required caveats of I don't believe in slavery, you know, and I don't believe in those certain components that have already been amended out of the Constitution. When I say I'm a constitutionalist,
right.
it's to say that I'm a constitutionalist, including the amendments, even if the ones that I don't agree with. And those ones that I don't agree with, I still accept them because they are part of the document. Until I'm able to somehow, you know, through an Article 5 Convention of States or through a congressional variation of an amendment, unless I'm able to use the system, to change the system, I have to abide by the system. It's the same reason why I refuse to say, you know, what Obama said or this, that, or the other. I still refer to him. I disagree with him wholeheartedly. But he is President Obama. He is President of the
yes.
United States. And his yes. office, whether I agree with him or not, the President of the United States is still the President of the United States. When, as someone who was born in the Philippines, when I see the President of the Philippines saying nasty things about Obama today, that's I'm not going to say, you know, root him on and say, hey, you know, whatever. This is still the President of the United States. I can rip on him. You can't.
he didn't bust out the son of the whore thing again, did he?
No, he went. He said, you can go to hell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
really?
So
wow.
Yes, really. It was he actually used those exact words in Tagalog. But it's still, you know, it is what it is. They are an ally for now.
Right.
It's becoming very clear that he doesn't want to be an ally. I'm not one who's reactionary. Who says, you know what, if they don't want us, then we don't want them. There needs to be cooler heads to prevail. And if he's not going to be the cooler head, then we need to figure out how to work with him in some way. You know, if it just becomes impossible, then perhaps it is time to end arguably our best strategic ally in the South China Sea. And that would be unfortunate and should be avoided at almost all costs. But then again, they don't want us. We can't force them. You can't make somebody love you, not even Bruce Almighty. He couldn't even, you know, with his powers, make anybody love him.
Well, I must be misreading the situation a little bit, because it was my general impression that the Philippines have moved a little bit closer to our bosom because of the threat of, you know, the way the Chinese have been maneuvering in the South China Sea.
No, you haven't missed. So what you're hearing is mixed messages. You're hearing the one side, and the those prudent minds, the whatever you want to call it, the cooler heads over there, in particular the military. The military is very much, you know, they work with our military. The exercises, the standard, I believe it's every 2 years, the combat exercises, joint combat exercises between the United States and America, which is designed not just to help them get an understanding of our technology, help us to be able to understand their capabilities, but also as a show to China and potentially even North Korea to demonstrate, you know, it's a flexing of the muscles, so to speak. The military commanders are all for it, but the president is not. He does not like Obama, and he has made that very, very clear. So that's why I say, you know, I saw a lot of reactions of maybe it's time to cut our ties with. No, that's that type of reactionary, you know, quote unquote conservative thought. You know, oh, he was mean to us, so we're going to cut ties with them. That's almost like saying, you know what, Japan and South Korea don't pay us enough. Maybe they should defend themselves with their own nukes. You know, it's the same type of mentality that's eating away at. Both, it's been leading away at the left forever, but even on the right, they're making those same mistakes. They're making the mistakes of being judgmental and reactionary, when in reality we need to look at this from a historical perspective, look at this from a long-term perspective, and make the right decisions. That's imperative. If we don't, then we're going to, you know, then we will eventually lose the republic. This is the wrong path to go down.
Yeah, it seems to me there's a middle course that could be reliably navigated in between the two extremes of isolationism and the other extreme of America being the, you know, unquestioned world's policeman or umpire. On the one hand, it seems like it's costing us an enormous amount of money to the extent that, well, the Europeans, you know, we've always talked about around here, because we have relatives in Europe, and we know have friends over there as well, and wonder how it is that they can go on all these vacations and they can do all this stuff that you never see Americans do unless Americans are, you know, upwardly mobile. I mean, really doing pretty doggone well. And, you know, and the free university and all that sort of thing. And when you dig into it a little bit further, what you discover is they are basically taking the money that they're not investing and defending themselves. In other words, the money they're not throwing into NATO on an equitable basis. And they're investing that in, you know, societal programs and other things that kind of take the burden off of the what would be the equivalent there of a middle class person. And, you know, the free riding syndrome, I do have a little bit of sympathy for that argument. But,
oh,
you know, like you say, you've got to be sensible how you go about it, too.
And I agree. I agree that you can't allow the United States to be, you know, the
beast of burden,
the bank.
Yeah,
beast of burden. There you go. But to essentially be the bank, we don't have the money to be the bank. But
no.
there's a caveat there, and that is you must be able to. America should be not necessarily the judge and the police, but we should have the ultimate say when it comes to world events. This is something that people will say, you know, oh, that sounds globalist. No, it's actually anti-globalist. The concept is that if we focus on primacy, if we make ourselves essential once again, you know, people say, look back to, again, I keep invoking Reagan, and that's a very common Republican thing to do. I'm looking at it from the perspective of his philosophies. Reagan's philosophy, you know, people, if you were to ask somebody who wasn't aware of history based on what they know of the legend of Reagan or the, you know, the stories told about Reagan and who he was and how tough he was, they would probably think that he was this, you know, great manipulator, this invader, that he went in and he had armies everywhere, and he was, you know, he was acting as the police. He was one of the least interventional presidents of our time, of the modern era. You know, he had fewer military interactions than Clinton, definitely than Bush. Bush, of course, was Bush. Both Bushes had their own variations of Iraq wars, but even technically less than Obama. And like you said, Reagan didn't need to go out and flex his muscles. People believed in the muscles of America, and they believed in the superiority of Reagan's, you know, they believed in the threat of Reagan, I guess the easiest way to say it. And
mm-hmm. The carrot
it did
and the
help
stick.
To bring down. Yeah, exactly. It did help
mm-hmm.
to bring
the
down
carrot and the stick.
The carrot. Yeah, exactly. It helped to bring down the wall. It helped to bring down the Soviet Union. It helped to bring the world to a place where it actually had an opportunity to thrive through democracy rather than through communism, through fascism, through other forms of ruling over people.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Sovietism. Yeah, it seems like it looks to people who, I have friends who have immigrated here within, you know, their generation, and they see what they recognize as creeping Sovietism. That is to say, the dominance of the federal government over so many things that ought to be constitutionally relegated to state authority and at the local level. And it's tough. It's tough when it gets to this extent to kind of turn that around, because there's so much dependency that has accompanied that increasing, you know, government paternalism.
Absolutely.
Dina, I'm probably, and this is dominating this conversation here. Dina, you probably have a few things that you wanted to check in with JD about.
Yeah, I did. So I'm interested in your party and why you decided this was the time to start it. Because we've been having a lot of third-party people come on our show and talk about their parties. And the one thing I found is that, you know, most of them have the driving force is Christianity and wanting a party that stands for Christ. And that also seems to be the theme in here. So tell us a little more about your party, why you started, why you felt it was important to do.
There's a lot of answers to that question. Let's try to nail a few of them. First and foremost, it's important to note that we do have, you know, the site from which we're launching the awareness of the newamericana.com, but it's not the New Americana Party.
Okay.
We have a current working title. Yeah, we have several names in mind. We have a current working title of the Unified Conservative Party. Again, very much a working title. That will not be the name of the party, but as people started asking, you know, it's hard to get interest. We're driving to get as many tens of thousands of people as possible to be interested in it and to raise their hand. And before official launch, which won't happen until after the election, there's no point of having a new party starting today because it's too late. You know, we should have started 2 years earlier or at least a year earlier if we were really going to try to make a run for it. So we did not. But to get the interest, we needed to have a working title. The actual name of the party will be decided over time. Right now we're accumulating basically three batches of people. We're accumulating those of interest, and that's starting to rise very dramatically, you know, much faster than I would have anticipated. We're also accumulating what I like to call active hand raisers. These are people that have expressed not just, you know, yeah, let's do it. It's more along the lines of, yes, here I am, here's what I can do, you know, here's you know, let me know what the next steps are and how I can help. You know, the people that have actually proactively communicated with us beyond just saying, raising their hand and saying, hi, I want to join the new party. And then the third level is the, call it the core. You know, I like to look at it more as a starting point because I do believe that it needs to be a grassroots effort. There shouldn't be elitists, but with that said, we still need people with experience. We need people who, right now we have Tea Party leaders who are getting involved. We have members of the media who are getting involved, conservative media, of course. And we have logistical experts, people that are, you know, for example, we have our election election law attorney. You know, we have the fundraising bundlers. We have those people that are required from a logistics perspective to be able to actually operate the company. This core group is the one that is growing more every day. Spoke to two more people today who are part of that. And, of course, I shouldn't say that that's the group that's growing every day. All three groups are growing every day. We're moving up by the hundreds daily as far as hand raisers. And we're moving up by the, I would say dozens, maybe we might get 100 active, you know, people that are basically willing to saying, you know, yes, I'll help, I'll contribute, I'll do whatever needs to be done. That part is moving up quickly, and we're trying to reach that tipping point before the election so that the day after the election we can officially launch. At that point, we'll be able to have our name made public and take it from there. Now, you asked why. Why do we do it? You know, this comes down to a lot of different factors. The main factor being that this is the perfect storm. There hasn't been a time in modern history, we can go back to the 19th century, since there was a time when there was a true angst amongst the people, where they truly were not satisfied, a good chunk of them, whether it's a majority, a large minority, whatever it is. There's enough people who are tired of, whether it's their choices for president or whether it's the activities of the Congress, you know, giving away everything and taking nothing despite having the control that we gave to them. in two out of the last three elections of Congress. It could be just simply, you know what, I'm tired of having working with a party that is only, you know, a little less liberal than the Democrats. That angst, that buildup is tangible today. And then, so the question then becomes, why not just work with the Constitution Party, America's Party, all these various, you know, quote unquote conservative parties out there. For this to be successful, we're not here to make a statement. We're not trying to lead a revolt that's here to, you know, to stake our claim, be the protest vote, and wag our fingers at the bad guys in the other parties. We want to actually break through the two-party system in a way, and we have a strategy that we are very confident we'll be able to do exactly that. It's a strategy. Many of the portions of the strategy have never been tried before, and they should work. I don't want to say they are going to work, you know, because it's out of my hands. But based upon everything that we've seen so far, this should be a viable party by 2020, if not with some very strong push and potentially extremely strong push for the 2018 election. So I hope that answered the question.
That does. And a lot of people forget about the down ticket. They always think about, oh, the presidency and that being the most important part. But what are you doing to ensure that you have representatives in all the various factions, whether it's, you know, a governor, or a mayor, or a city council? Are you trying to build that up as well? Are you just more concerned on a presidency in 2020?
Yeah, excellent question. Yeah. So that group two that I was telling you about, the reason that I hold so much more weight for those active hand raisers, those truly involved people, is because these are the people where we can start to identify where our strongholds are. The strongholds will be built based upon the people. We can't say, you know what, we want to take over Nebraska, or we want to get the presidency. We can't make those decisions. Those decisions will be made based upon the groundswell in a particular area, the leadership within a particular area. So when you ask, you know, are we focused on the presidency and you know, just that, or just the national races, it's the exact opposite. We know that the proper way to build the party is to build it from the bottom up. And in a way, by building it from the bottom up, we're establishing our philosophy of essentially the inversion of government back the way that it was intended to be. The top of government should be the individual, followed by the family, followed by the community, followed by the city, mm-hmm. followed by the county, followed by the state. And then the federal government should be the bottom rung, not the top, the bottom rung of government. It should be the last resort. It should be, you know what, military and, you know, and certain infrastructure components, you know, and be that last resort of government. It should not be that it's everything is decreed down from there. It's the exact opposite. That's the Constitution was intended to give the powers of liberty and freedom to the individuals to protect those, and then to establish different levels of necessary government, working their way, quote unquote, based on today's structure, working their way up. So yes, we're going to focus on everything from school boards to mayors, city councilmen, auditors, every level. And it'll be based upon where we're able to develop a groundswell. For example, we have one particular congressional district where, based upon, you know, it started off with one seat, one person who saw what we were doing, became very interested, had a nice long conversation with me, and decided, you know what, I love what you're doing. I'd like to figure out a way to make this happen. I explained to him that the easiest way to make this happen is to work locally. Forget about nationally. We'll be able to handle that part. You know, nationally is built by a joining of various pockets around the country. So within this congressional district, which isn't very large, I would say that we already have representation that's over 1%, which people will say, oh, you've only got 1%. Look, 1% for a party that doesn't even have a name yet, I'm very happy with that, because that means that, you know, we can take from there, and once we officially launch, that 1% should be able to grow to a valid amount, at which point then we'll be able to use our bases. Our strength is going to be through education. Again, when I said, people ask me, what in the world are you doing as a business owner in marketing? What gives you the right to start a party? First and foremost, I tell them that I'm not starting a party. We are. I am simply creating a venue. You know, I'm calling the meeting, okay? I'm not going to be the – I'm not going to run for office. I'm not going to be the Reince Priebus of this party, you know. Ideal situation, I get to move to Wyoming and build a cabin, and I get to watch on Fox News or Trump News Network or whatever about how, you know, here's this new party making a wave, and looks like they're going to get a, you know, I would love to be able to just sit back, drink my coffee, and eat popcorn, not at the same time, because popcorn and coffee don't go well together, but you know what I mean. Sit back and just watch this happen. With that said, the strategy component, the way to make this work, this, you know, secret sauce or whatever you want to call it, that is where I do come in, and that is where you know, my talents, what I've done, you know, being able to work in business, being able to build up companies, sell them, build up new companies, utilizing the same basic strategy from a perspective of operating it through transparency and through information, taking advantage of modern technology, which is given to us, not worrying about spam, not worrying about pop-ups, not going to email a bunch of people and beg them for money. We have a way that will actually allow people to want to participate. They don't need to be nagged. They're going to be like, wow, this is refreshing. This is, you know, who'd have thunk it that government could actually tell you, hey, if you want to, you know, donate $50 to the party, you'll get to decide, you know, does this go towards supporting a local candidate? Do you want it to go towards, you know, our fighting this particular abortion bill? Do you want, you know, 50% of it to go to supporting, you know, opposing this gun grab, or do you want, and the other 50% going to this particular candidate? That level of transparency, which is so possible today, is, you know, think of it along the lines of GoFundMe. You know, are you familiar with the crowdfunding?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So
yes.
So you go to, you know, we're not. You don't go to GoFundMe and you don't say, okay, so I'm going to donate to GoFundMe and let them pick out the charity. You actually get to go through and see, you know, what interests me. What speaks to me? Is it the kid that wants to get a new prosthetic? Is it the dude that got ripped off by his realtor? Is it this guy who's wanting to make a new video game? What's appealing to me? Where am I going to put my $10 here, $5 there, $30 here, $100 there? Okay, and then if we translate that over to the fundraising side of getting the political party going and getting the political party active, we'll be able to empower the people to decide, and they'll get to actually see what's happening with the money. We need to keep logistics low, just as we do with the government. What we're building the party the way that we believe the Constitution declares that the country itself should be run. You know, there's not going to be if you donate. You donate $100, $70 of it goes to paying off the fundraisers and the lobbyists and the, you know, this, that, or the other. This is going to be, if you're going to donate $100, hey, we need to pay the secretary, we need to pay the lady who's running that particular side of the campaign. We need to pay this guy who makes copies for us, and then the other 94% of it is going to go towards actually putting our message in front of these people in your local area, because that's what you care about. These are things that should be done, because, you know, they weren't done in the past because it was impossible. They're not done today because it's crazy, except it's not. It can be done. We have the ability, we have the technology to focus on making things transparent and getting the real issues out there. This will work two ways, though. It's not just a matter of, oh, you know, this makes it easier for us to raise money and to get candidate support. And it also forces the candidates, by the way, by doing it like this, it also forces the candidates themselves to participate with the party, participate with their constituents to declare why they, you know, essentially not just pitch them as to, hey, you know, donate to this party. It's also, why should you donate to me? You know, why should you help me? Because I'm going to fight for you. But it's a whole other issue. The second component is from an education perspective. I firmly believe that if you were to take the majority of people, and if you didn't put any labels on it, you just took question by question by question by question and asked them in an unbiased way, you know, do you associate more with this perspective or this perspective? Do you associate more with this perspective or this perspective? Or would you, do you consider yourself very pro-life to the point of, no exceptions whatsoever, pro-life or with exceptions, pro-choice, but only in, take it all the way down the line. If you were to take that type of survey without any labels and you gave it to the majority of people, you would find that that most people are, quote-unquote, conservative. Again, I hate to use that label, but most people would believe in the conservative mentality if they didn't have it associated with the Republican Party, especially minorities. Keep in mind that minorities, we're talking about many of them that are deeply religious, deeply socially conservative, and who have been programmed to believe that they're still Democrats because of racism. They're still Democrats because of that these people, this party is going to do this for me. If you were able to inform them, if you were able to truly guide them and give them an option that is not associated with racism, it's not associated, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that the Republican Party is racist. I'm saying that it has been painted over the decades. I think erroneously at times, I would say erroneously most of the time, but it has been painted as being associated with racism. It's not that the Republican Party is racist. It's that most racists turn out to be Republicans. If they're white racists, the perception, again, I'm not saying that this is true. I'm saying the perception is that Caucasian racists will probably be Republicans. Whether that's true or not doesn't matter. That's the perception that's being painted across the nation. We have the opportunity with a new party to embrace the fact that, or at least our opinion, we will never know it's fact until we're actually able to do it. But I would say that post the fact that a good chunk of these people, such as myself, I'm a minority, a good chunk of us are truly conservative. We're just programmed to not think that we're Republican. We're programmed to think we're Democrat.
I myself, I'm black. And so it took a long time. I'm black. So, it took me a long time to come to the Republican Party because of that. Because I was just raised in a white household. And so I was told by my parents, who were white, that, the Republican Party does not like you. So I believe mom and dad. And so it took years of, it came to a point where I could no longer be a Democrat. I was like, you guys are just like losing your mind. They blew out on TV. They were pro-choice to the extreme. And I was like, it's between God and the Democratic Party. So I'm going to have to choose one or the other. So obviously I chose God. So I know what that mindset is like, and it took a lot of, just courage on my part to say, you know what, I'm Republican. And then I left after 15, 16 years because they booting your conscience on TV. And I was like, no, I can't do that. And so then I left after 16 years. But I'm like, you guys got to stop doing this. I'm tired of, trying to find these new parties. I get comfortable with one and you guys do something and say stop. So I do think people are still out there feeling that way, and it has been shown that blacks go to church on a much more regular and higher basis than white people. They have studies. And so, we are as a community, we are very conservative, especially when it comes to social issues. When it comes to finances, we tend to get a little more liberal, but by and large, we're very conservative. And so it is sort of frustrating when I talk to people, in my community, just about, you know, conservatism as a whole, they just seem not to understand it. So I'm like, you're already conservative. You're already there. You know, you may not like the title, but that's pretty much what you are. You know? So, I mean, how do we fight against this long-held belief? Because a lot of people are not going to be like me and just do it. So how do we get past that? How do we make them see that you're already there? You just need to find a party that sort of suits you. And it's not the Democrats and it's not the Republicans at this point.
Absolutely. I think that the, I have a friend who's not associated with the party, but who has made it his mission. He's formed an organization that is focused on education. And one of his dreams, one of his goals, he's currently raising money for is to start opening centers across America that focus on, you know, essentially the easiest way. And I believe I'm paraphrasing his perspective. I hope I'm doing him his perspective justice, is that you can't just go through and hammer the points, you know. You can't just go through and talk about the issues. You have to give them a reason to want to listen, first and foremost. And by doing that, the easiest way to do that is to start solving problems for people. And this has nothing to do with – this isn't a race thing, by the way. It's not just, you know, go into Asian communities, go into Black communities, go into whatever. This is about going and helping to solve, becoming part of the solution to solve problems such as gang violence, such as you know, the one of the easiest ways to keep people from joining a gang is to give them something better to do. This is why, you know, I mean, it's a lot of times, let's face it, a lot of the crime that happens is because, you know, people want to be cool when they're, especially when they're young, and so they see coolness in the wrong crowd, and they have nothing better to do, so they end up going along with it. People can be very, very impressionable when they're young, and so give them something more. Give them a reason to want to not be walking around in the park with the wrong group of people at midnight. Give them something better to do. Give them, you know, again, I'm probably butchering his perspective, but essentially he's saying that you can educate people by giving them a reason to be in the place where the education is. Don't just go out and do outreach. And don't get me wrong, outreach is great, but that shouldn't necessarily be the only focus. It's funny that you'd mentioned conscience, because one of the contenders, I'm going to reveal, you know, live on air for the first time, world exclusive. One of the contenders for our party name is Conscience Party. We do own conscienceparty.com, conscienceparty.org. I don't think that it'll work, unfortunately, because, you know, to the name of a party must be, it must follow certain criteria. We have one criteria, which is you have to own the URLs. But the second criteria is that you have to have a personal identity. In other words, if you're in the Democratic Party, you're a Democrat. If you're in the Libertarian Party, you're a Libertarian. If you're in the Conscience Party, you're a, what? Conscientiarian. it could get weird. So, you know, we have to look at every single perspective and every possibility. Last part, and then I know there's at least some more questions. One last component that I need to get in there is that our strategy to reach the groundswell, to be able to achieve and to really, to answer your question, finish answering your question from before, you know, why now and why not go with another party, is because they never achieved the velocity to be able to break through, you know, to break through the atmosphere, to break the pull of gravity, you need to go 33 times the speed of sound. And some of these parties have been able to get up high in the air, but they have zero chance. They have as much chance of breaking into the two-party system and turning in party system as a 747 has of going into outer space. It's called impossible. You cannot do it, and you cannot take what they've done pre-existing, unless you, I shouldn't say it's impossible, but but it would take a fundamental change in, for example, the Constitution Party or America's Party or any of those. They would have to fundamentally change not necessarily their messaging or their principles, but their style of growth. Our style of growth is going to focus on, again, going viral, but more importantly, it's going to focus on you know, I talk about transparency. The one thing we're not going to be transparent about is size. You know, we're never going to disclose how big we are until we're big enough to not fail. And I know that's pulling from a very nasty phrase, too big to fail. But here's the thing. The establishment, and I'm talking about the true establishment. I'm talking about, you know, the combination of Republicans and Democrats, the establishment in the center that's actually, you know, keeping these down. They have such a vested interest in keeping the system as a two-party system that you could be as large as the Libertarian Party. You could have $1 billion in your coffers. They will destroy you. They will find a way to make sure that you do not achieve that velocity to be able to break into the system. The only way that it could ever be done is if they're caught, is if, you know, they won't let you near the glass unless you can sneak up and be next to the glass by the time they even notice you. So when we do announce how big we've become, we're not going to set milestones. Oh, look, we've hit 100,000. Look, we've hit 500,000. Look, we've hit 1 million. You know, they won't know. We're not going to announce how many people we have until it's too late for them to be able to take us down. And that is, in my opinion, the only possible chance of being the other second party. Instead of being a third party spoiler, to actually be, to break the system, to push the Republican Party to where it's always wanted to be, which is in the center, allow the Democratic Party to continue to push to the left, and then be the conservative party on the right that forms what should be, you know, a three-party system. And then eventually, if we're looking 20 years down the line, eliminate the party system altogether, but that's a whole other, we'll need another hour on that. So,
yeah, we did. We talked a little bit about that with Christina Tobin when she had her, when we had her on from Free and Equal, and she looks forward to the day, you know, when it comes about that that the parties can be dispensed with and just basically dealing with, you know, dealing with principles rather than party structures.
Yeah,
you're right. That's another program altogether.
Yeah, if you look back in history, you look at our founders, they were not fond of parties at all, you know? And they just thought parties would ruin the republic. And you only have to look at our two-party system right now to see what they were talking about and see it sort of happening in full force. And, you know, I'm totally done with the parties. You know, I just want to go with the party that I feel best represents my values. And if people might vote like that, then I'm sorry. You're just going to have to deal with it. I don't conform. I've just never been a performer. So I guess my last question would be, you know, do you see a time where parties are eliminated? And there is, and you also talk about transparency, and, you know, Obama talked about, you know, having the bills up there for 3 days and being the most transparent government, you know, stuff like that. Never happened. So is that sort of what you also mean by transparency within your organization, or does it go beyond that?
It does. It does mean that, and it does go beyond that. Transparency needs to be, first and foremost, transparency needs to be redefined to what it actually truly means. Or I should redefine. It's already been redefined. It needs to be unredefined, I guess, is the best way to put it. The transparency in government is one that, you know, there are certain things that must remain secret. I still believe in the classified system. You know, there are certain pieces of information that, for the sake of securing the nation, there are certain things that should not be out there. I'm not a big fan of WikiLeaks or you know, or the like. But with that said, there does need to be a level of transparency that breaks through exactly what we're seeing. For example, the easiest example is budgeting. There's absolutely no reason for budgets to be grouped together except for a lack of transparency, except to give them being the establishment, the ability to wheel and deal so that they can have plausible deniability regarding why they voted for this. I had to vote for that because if I didn't vote for that, then the military would have been cut. I had to vote for this because if I didn't vote for that, then Planned Parenthood wouldn't have gotten funding. You know, it doesn't matter which side
mm-hmm.
you're on. They group it together
mm-hmm.
for that specific thing. If you were to chop it apart to where each individual, it's funny because the argument is, well, that'd be so much work. Well, guess what? You're getting paid for it. You're getting paid better than most Americans who are working much harder, who don't have golf times. Okay, if a senator has to work 80 hours a week in order to be able to go through and have a full understanding of what they're going to be voting on individually, each individual component of the budget, and that way they can make a conscientious decision, not based upon give or take, but based upon this is something that I approve of, this is something that I don't approve of. That level of transparency is where it needs to start. Okay, and then you work it all the way down to the point of making sure that transparency is allowable so that people have a say in government, not just from the perspective of their vote, not just from the perspective of being able to speak out, but from the perspective of being able to take over certain aspects of it. Government should be transitioned. Okay, the only way we can get to a true smaller government, there's no way to have smaller government with the current system. You know, it's a pipe dream.
No.
It cannot be done because it's so intertwined that if you unravel a little bit of it, other things are going to fall apart. The only way that you can do it is through a transitionary period with each individual component, to where it's addressed, it's looked at, and you start off with one question. Can we take this, and would it be better if this was given to the private sector? Okay, could the private sector do a better job than we could at this? And the answer, most of the time, is going to be yes. Then the question becomes, how do we transition? You have a team. You know, this is the only thing that I would ever add to government, is a transition team. A transition team that would allow them to, through expertise, through having, you know, they go department to department, agency to agency, task to task, study to study, and they decide, the first question is this even relevant? Is this necessary? You can't convince me that if the EPA just decided to shut its doors and not exist, that all of a sudden, you know, that rain clouds are going to start spitting out acid rain on cows, and, you know, and the ozone layer is going to fall into the Indian Ocean. No, it's the EPA could disappear tomorrow and nobody would even know. If you didn't tell them, they would have no idea. Okay, that to me smells like something that could be eliminated. I'm not saying you pull out the rug from under them, but you can transition them sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, to where that no longer is a burden of government, which makes it to where it's no longer a burden on the taxpayers. Okay?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that would be the only thing
I
would ask. That level of transparency is the way to do it.
I know they have a bill right now that is asking that each bill is one thing. So if it's to defend Planned Parenthood, that's it. There's no little earmarks. There's no little,
nope.
You know, other stuff put in there. And, you know, and you vote on that one bill and that's it. And I think, you know, that is something else that totally needs to be done. You don't need to have basically what constitutes 30 bills in one bill, you know, you have 30
mm-hmm.
different bills of different purpose, you know,
right.
Is that something else you would consider doing, you know, if you had the power to?
Say again, you broke up there at the end.
I said, is that something else you would do, like with the one bill, if that would be it? Is that something else you're looking at?
Oh, no, there would not be one bill. One bill per, an individual bill for each individual action, yes.
Yes, exactly.
So you're right. We can't fund Kate's Law because then it affected this, that, and the other. You know, forget that. Okay,
no.
Address Kate's Law. You know, address sanctuary cities. Address everything. If we put Planned Parenthood on the ballot, and I'm not the ballot. Sorry, forgive me there. We're not a democracy. We're a republic. If we put Planned Parenthood on the floor and allowed it to be individually discussed, argued, the bill's written, and it's decided, does it pass, does it fail, then we move on to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And does that mean that both chambers will have to work harder? Absolutely. And I'm, you know, I have no apologies. I don't feel bad for them at all. We need to keep in mind that if you wanted, you'd ask, is it possible, initially, yes, is it possible to make it to where there's no longer a two-party system? Absolutely. but it's not going to be working through the party. It's not something that we could do. Even let's say that in 2020 we've got 15, 20, 30% of the vote. We still couldn't do it. Let's say in 2024, you know, we've been able to make a true three-party system, and we've got 33.3% of the vote. We still can't do it. The only way, if you really want to eliminate the party system, it's to change the jobs themselves, okay? Change the roles to where being a senator is not a cush job. It's not a position of great honor to where you get toasted and you get to travel around and do all these wonderful things and get you know, kiss babies and campaign for two out of your 6 years in office or half your time if you're a congressperson. Okay, forget about that. Let's make it to where the jobs themselves are actually the type of job that the only person that would ever want to do it. It's not somebody of ego. It's not somebody who's self-serving. It's somebody who's a true servant, a servant to the country, a servant to their representatives. Let's not make it easy. You know, let's not make it to where, oh, you know, you'll get all this campaign funds. Forget about it. Don't get me started on campaign reform. Okay, let's make it to where if the people that actually want to do it are the people that want to make a change. If the job was like that, when I said earlier that I wouldn't run, it's because I don't want that kind of life. I want challenges. Okay, and I don't see being a senator or being a congressman as a true challenge in my life. Okay, I could make it a challenge, but the average senator and the average congressman, even the good ones, are unfortunately still, you know, relatively pampered. I'm not suggesting that they have to live in poverty and they can't have security. What I'm suggesting is that they have to work their butts off. If you volunteer, if you want to run, and guess what? It's going to be really, really hard. And if you can change it to where that is what the job is, then you're going to get a different class of people, a different breed of people that are taking this job on. And those are the types of people that you can then identify with on an individual basis. And you could say, yes, this person, regardless of what letter is next to their name, regardless of whoever is allegedly funding them, or if anybody's funding them at all, I can vote for this person because I believe in what this person wants to do. Mm-hmm. That's how you change the system. But again, we're looking at a long ways off. I don't want to be pessimistic, but that's going to take – we'll have to get the party in there first, and then we'll have to exact those changes over a period of time because they're going to be we're talking about getting these people who are currently the beneficiaries of these perks, getting these people to vote these perks away. And that makes a challenge. That's where we start getting we're going to have to get some really, really, really good salesmen or something, lobbyists. I don't even know what we'd need, but it'll be hard. But it can be done. It can be done. I wouldn't be doing this at all.
I think another thing we have to do is get rid of this constant fear that, you know, well, if I vote for this person, or if I don't vote for this person, this other person is going to get into office, and they're going to make things so much worse. You know, I have never done anything in fear that has had a good result. Fear never leads to anything good, but that's where we seem to be at now and just in the past. We seem to vote out of the fear of somebody else instead of, oh, yes, this is a good person. They definitely need to be in there. You know, so how do we alleviate some of the fear that people are feeling?
Well, but that, you know what, though, that was intentionally, that was structured intentionally by these parties. That's how they operate. That's how they set up the optics that they operate off of and the and the narrative. It's by design. It's not that it just sort of accidentally happened that you wound up with these two people. It was by design. It was intended to be that way, and it was engineered to be that way. And the process, was driving that outcome. So, I think JD is on the right track in terms of that. If you begin to educate people, education usually the process of education and enlightenment usually dispels fear and replaces it with, you know, with understanding.
Yeah.
We Yeah, we dread and we fear what we can't comprehend in a proper frame of reference.
And
like you said, that is
point
that
of,
is a,
we've been conditioned to the point to believe that that's the way it is. It's I think that you know there's two ways for it to happen. Either we create the long term plan and we hammer it away, in which case it will take at least a generation to make it work. And it could take more than a generation, but it can be done. Anything can be done in a generation, just so we understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can be, you know, one generation from right now, we could America could be communist. That is possible. Okay, anything can happen in a generation. So we can't, you know, anything good or bad can happen in a generation. So there's that. Or there's the possibility of, and this is the, what we're going to be shooting for, just to try to, it's not counterproductive to shoot for this, even though it's a long shot, but it's, you're going to laugh. Internally, we call it the Monsters, Inc. technique. Have you seen the movie Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah.
So the perpetuation of, they get their energy off of screams. So they send the monsters into the kids' rooms, and they get when the kids scream, then they're able to collect that energy, and that's what they use to fuel their society, their alternate universe on the other side of the bedroom closet. Okay, and you go through the entire movie. That's why the best monsters are the ones that scream. It's not until the very end that they find out that, you know, that actually what happens is that even though screaming does produce quite a bit of energy, you can produce quite a bit more energy with if you get them to laugh. That laughter is actually more potent of an energy source. So instead of sending in Big John Goodman's character to go and make them scream, they send in little Billy Crystal's character to go in and start telling jokes, get the kids to laugh, and and they're able to collect a lot more energy that way. That technique, that is essentially by saying, say, look, we're going to do this by example. We're going to show that this can work from inside the party to demonstrate it as a microcosm of what can happen within the government. The transparency does work. The picking out people based upon not whether or not they're qualified to be politicians, but whether or not they're qualified to be leaders that truly care about what they're doing, not caring about you know what perks they're going to get by becoming a congressman, caring about, you know, it's going to be really, really hard, and I'm going to make the sacrifice of becoming a congressperson so that because the country needs me to. Because the country, you know, it's almost like turning, think of it along the lines of turning politicians into the same type of service as the military. You know, I won't say that the military life is not rewarding because it is, but it's also, it is a sacrifice. You are putting yourself potentially at risk at any moment. And that willingness to fight for your country, that's the same type of willingness that needs to be enacted within the halls of government. We need people that are there, not because they're wondering what fame and fortune and perks they're going to get by being in government. We want them there because, you know what, this sucks, but I need to be here for my country because I want my kids and my grandkids to have a better life. And that's the type of mentality that can change it. And if we can show that in a quick fashion over a relatively short period of time, a decade perhaps, we can show that in a quick fashion, then we could achieve the laugh moment in Monsters, Inc. Otherwise, it's something we're going to have to work for. Work through the proper channels, continue to get the right people elected, continue to be educating and saying the right things, stay focused on our principles and our conscience. And then within a generation, hopefully, we can do what's never been done before, which is to change the country fundamentally in a positive way versus the fundamental change that we've seen over the last 8 to 16 to 24 years, however long you want to take it back to where the blame actually starts. But that's a whole other hour as well.
Well,
I like that you continue for education as well, because when I was growing up, I didn't take a civics class. I didn't read the Constitution. I had no sort of anything about any of that stuff. I said I didn't read the Constitution when I was growing up. I didn't have a civics class that taught you about our Constitution, that taught you about, you know,
did you say a class for the Constitution?
I said I didn't have one. Civics. CIVICS.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
Okay.
I was going to say that one of our requirements, not requirements, I hate to use that word, one of the things that we will be proposing as, because we obviously we're very much for school choice, very much for, you know, against Common Core, very much for everything from vouchers to ESAs, you know, all the way down the line, you know, the ability for people. Okay. Anyway, but it's funny that you mentioned that, because we do believe that it's not just civics, that the Constitution is a living document, and taking it, having a full understanding by the time people leave high school.
Yeah.
They should be able they should know the Constitution inside and out. Okay.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they shouldn't know the Constitution. They shouldn't. You know, there's no reason why a president should be saying, or a presidential candidate should be saying, you know, I believe in the first, you know, I believe in Article 1, Article 2, Article 12. I'm going to protect them all, you know, of the seven articles. So that should never be. And you know, we can make fun of him. But here's the thing. If you were to ask average Joe on the street, even somebody who's fresh out of high school, even fresh out of college, how many articles there are, I would say that the majority would not know that there's seven. If you were to ask, you know, what is... Yeah, I mean, asking what the 10th Amendment is, asking what, you know, do we want to increase the powers of the executive branch? The answer would be, what's the executive branch? These are things that shouldn't be. This isn't hard.
Yeah.
Okay, the Constitution is not like War and Peace. It's a very basic document. The amendments are not, you know, people say, oh, you know, I studied the Second Amendment. I laugh, because the Second Amendment is not something that you study. You read it. You can memorize it in about 10 minutes. You're a Second Amendment scholar. Give me a break. You know, it's very straightforward and simple. So, anyway.
So, yeah,
we have a caller. We have a caller. Dina.
We do?
We have a caller on the line.
Okay.
We have a caller on the line that has a question for, his name is Michael, and he has a question for JD, so I'm going to bring him on right now. Hello, Michael. We have you on the line with JD.
Yeah, thank you, sir, and good evening to everyone. I just wanted to say, I think in America, and I say this as someone who immigrated here, but I notice among a lot of Americans, especially younger people below the age of 25, is a lack of appreciation and a lack of awareness of the actual benefits of being a U.S. citizen. And I think the big thing with that would be financial literacy. I think that's the number one issue that would solve the majority of when it comes to conservative issues, because the conservatives' problem is that the liberals are taking advantage of the financial illiteracy, because a lot of these young people don't understand how to actually engage the credit system, how to develop their credit system and use that to leverage, to gain loans, to actually invest into businesses and real estate. And because they don't see how to actually engage the system and how to use capitalism, they feel like the system is rigged against them. So therefore they feel like the need to want to adopt a political revolution and adopt something like a socialist model. And so I think if we can focus on really teaching people how to actually make money and how easy it is to make money in America, and how America is the easiest nation on the planet that has ever existed for a common citizen to make money in, it would drastically change people's political views. Then they wouldn't feel like the system is set up against them. Then they would see the benefits of it, and then therefore they would actually go along with conservatives, because they would see that the socialist model isn't, in fact, the ideal one. So with that, I yield to you, sir.
Absolutely. Now, Michael, you're 100% correct, and it's funny because you said that America is the easiest place to make money, the easiest place to become wealthy. It's not just that America is the easiest place; it's that today is the easiest time. Okay, despite the negatives within the economy, we can say the economy is so bad, and it is. We can say the government is overbearing, and it is. But here's the thing: is that because of, you know, the combination of technology, the way that things have opened up from a world perspective, and we can look squarely at the internet and squarely at other things, it is very much easier today to make money in America from scratch than it was in, say, the 70s or 80s. So you're doubly right there. Now, as far as the education, people not having an understanding of, you know, financial literacy, it's a problem that's systemic, not just with finance, but in everything. The indoctrination that occurs in our education system, and I'm not talking about just, you know what I get sick of? When people say, you know, when colleges adopt, safe spaces. No, there is a safe space.
Yeah.
It's called America, okay? America is a safe space, okay? There's, you know, you could go to the worst neighborhoods in America, and they might be really bad, but go walk in Aleppo, okay? Go take a hike through Venezuela. And tell me that you know that it's just that we need a safe space here. we need safe spaces. We need socialism. We need people to redistribute money for our benefit. No, we do not. We absolutely do not. And the problem is that, you know, people have been trying to figure out why. How has this entitlement mentality occurred? And you nailed it, Michael, when you said that it's a matter of literacy, because we are specifically not shown how things work. We're not shown how the Constitution works. We're not shown how credit works. We're not even shown. It's sad that we're not shown, that we're not told from the very beginning the benefits of being an American. You know, you talk about immigration. You know, that there should be, this should not be a matter of illegal immigrants want to get over here so that they can take advantage of illegal immigration. This should be a question of my gosh, I want to be a U.S. citizen because U.S. citizenship has certain benefits that I could never get if I were, you know, as an illegal immigrant. Unfortunately, you know, we've isolated it down to where those who are illegal immigrants because of the liberal mentality, because of the liberal mindset, those who are here illegally often have as much, if not more, rights than even citizens. So no point, you know, it's almost as if these people that are trying to go follow the law, they're trying to get into this country legally, or they're already here legally and they're trying to stay legally, or they're trying to get their family here legally. They're like, why in the world would I do that? Because we've got, it's so much easier and actually more beneficial if we don't, if I just get them to somehow cross the border. Yeah, they'll take a risk. Yeah, they might lose everything. They might even get killed along the way, but at least they're going to get the benefits and they don't have to wait a decade. Okay, so across the board, the indoctrination of liberalism has created pockets of these problems that you're describing. And the only way to fight that is to educate people to the evils of socialism. Socialism isn't just a bad idea. I truly believe that socialism is an evil idea. I am not a big fan of Ayn Rand, okay? Nor would I ever recommend anyone who's never read Atlas Shrugged, don't take this as a recommendation to read it. But there is a certain symmetry between what was happening in the last section of Atlas Shrugged and what we're seeing today, because it all started to crumble based upon the blame mentality. It's not just the entitlement mentality, it's the blame mentality. It goes both ways. Not only do they feel like they deserve this, they also say that if I don't have this, it's because of you, it's because of them, it's because of this. There is no accountability. And that needs to be educated. That needs to be shown that, hey, socialism, not just the socialism from a wealth distribution perspective, but the socialist mentality itself needs to be described as evil. It is not.
Absolutely.
There's nothing beneficial about it. You know, socialism will always crumble eventually. Here's the hard part, and this is the problem with America from a lack of forward thinking mentality. Okay, socialism, and this, you know, you can quote me on this. Socialism does work for a very short period of time. Okay, socialism will work, but it will never work indefinitely, and it will never work for long enough to not crumble. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves on the planet. And they're having to import oil because they don't have the funds to be able to draw oil out of their own ground. Okay?
Yeah.
They,
you know,
should
like
be
easy
one
way
of the richest countries.
Sorry,
no, go ahead. Sorry,
I get
all upset.
I don't know, to your point that you brought up about socialism, I think an easy way I try to give people an analogy is socialism and liberalism is like ice cream, right? It's something that it tastes good. It's easy to convince people to take it because it goes down easy, but it's something that's okay in moderation here and there in little, you know, in parts. But if you make it the staple of your diet, both lunch, breakfast, dinner, over the long term, you're going to have terrible, you know, health issues. Similarly, conservative politics is basically like vegetables, right? They don't taste as good. It's very difficult to convince people that it's good for them. But when applied over the long term, it has long lasting benefits. And that's why I often tell people,
Michael,
that immature people. Yeah, it's something you should definitely use, but like immature, short sighted, because I was a liberal myself in the past up until the age of 22. Mm-hmm. And I was an atheist as well. When I became a Christian is when I became a conservative. You know, God showed me the error of my ways, but he also showed me how socialism, communism, and liberalism is all based on immature, short-sighted, self-centered, and selfishness. That's all it is, all of it, across the board.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's so evil. Yeah, and God is absolutely opposed to it 100% because it violates three of the Ten Commandments. It violates coveting your neighbor's goods. It violates do not steal from your neighbor. It also violates do not bear false witness, which is fundamentally why almost every communist and socialist dictator, they've all been atheistic. Like, I came from that. My entire mother's side of the family was murdered under a communist regime. So I know firsthand what these people are about. A lot of people don't know in Russia, Stalin went out of his way to bulldoze churches and turn them into museums. And they would kill people that refused to renounce their faith in Christ and swear allegiance to these atheistic states. And even on his deathbed, before the man died, he shook his fist at heaven, basically cursed God and died. I mean, these are the type of people that fundamentally support this. They are anti-God, anti-Christian people who create this. It's an evil system. There's no sugarcoating it. And I know what they'll do. And the young people don't know that this wealthy 1% that they're so upset about, that they think through a political revolution they're going to get rid of, what they don't know is that upper class is going to be replaced by someone else. And it ends up being an elite political class of people who are closely associated with the leading ruling body, particularly the whatever authoritarian dictator that they have, and they replace it. And what ends up happening is the rest of the population, 90% of them, they do have equality, but it's equality in poverty, where everybody's poor and everybody's living basically just getting by lifestyle. What ends up happening is you become indentured servitudes. It's basically like European feudalism all over again, where the majority of the population basically, you know, we work to get by, and whatever benefits we would get from our work go directly to the state. And the state in return gives us enough to live the next day. That's it. And there's untold atrocities. Exactly. But these young people, they don't know it.
Yeah.
No, they don't. And they need to be educated. If you would, Michael, my email is jdrucker, Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R, @Reagan.com. I'd like, if you're willing to, please email me. I'd like to get your perspectives down on paper, because this is the battle that we're fighting. We're fighting, and you recognize it. And it's funny, one of the things that we're really trying to push for is to get the voice of as many people, as many experiences as possible. One of our most prolific writers on the site is a 17-year-old high school conservative who came out of nowhere. She emailed me. She wants to write. I thought, okay, why not, you know? And she sent me something, and it blew me away. We put it on the site, and then it blew away even more because everybody seemed to like it. It got some pretty massive traffic, lots of good comments. I'd like to get your perspective as well on there, because you have – I wish we could say that it's a unique perspective, because that would be nice, but I don't think it is. I think that your perspective is actually one that's shared by a lot of people, and you know, for better or for worse. Your story, everything that you described and how it needs to be fixed needs to be out there. And so if you would, jdrucker @Reagan.com, and I'd like to talk to you further.
Yeah, I was going to recommend that you guys get hooked up. We also should say, JD, you have a Facebook page, do you not?
We have a couple, yeah.
JD Rucker, should they go to that, or should they go to the party site?
Here's the important thing: forget the name, forget JD Rucker. You know, if you're listening to this right now, I'm not important. The only thing that's truly important is, you know, thenewamericana.com, we're going to be making an announcement. We just hired a managing editor who's going to be starting next week, you know, someone to help us out. Thenewamericana.com is that's something to remember. And an even better thing to remember would be Unified Conservative Party. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/unifiedconservatives. We just officially launched it publicly less than a week and a half ago. And it's up to around 1,500 likes. You know, it's growing at hundreds per day. We're posting some of our thoughts there as far as from issues perspective, taking each individual issue, and again, for the sake of transparency, putting it out there and making sure and getting dialogue going. You know, we're not putting this out there from the perspective of, oh, you know, this is how we're going to do it. I don't want a platform that's built from, you know, a committee of two or three people and then agreed upon in a ceremony, you know, of delegates that are going to approve it every time. I want to look at each individual issue, go to the grassroots and have people part of the party, you know, by the thousands, by the tens of thousands, by the hundreds of thousands who want to participate in that particular portion, be able to give their input and be able to help decide what direction the party is going to go with each individual issue. So
right.
The New Americana, both the Facebook page as well as the website, and Unified Conservatives, it's on Facebook, facebook.com/Unified Conservatives. Follow those and interact with us. We'd love to, you know, we try to within a day or two, respond to every single comment, every single message that's sent to us. So it's getting to the point to where we have to hire a communications director specifically to be able to keep up with it, not just on that page, but on the other page as well as comments on the website. But, you know, we're going to do what we need to do to make sure that we are keeping in constant direct communication with as many people as possible, even when it gets into the hundreds of thousands or millions. I made a joke, I'm not going to say which party, but there was one party in particular that they had this big note on their page. You know, it's got their email address, and it's a, you know, it's a third party, and it's, you know, we do read most of your emails or all of your emails, but we don't reply to them because we just get so many. Bull, okay? There's no reason. If you contact a party, I don't care if you contact the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, okay? If you are an American citizen interested in participating with your party, you should be able to, and if you can't, then it's not really your party. You're beholden to the elite within the party. This party needs to be built from the grassroots, and it needs to be beholden to the grassroots, and the grassroots need to drive it. And I don't care how big we get. That's one thing. When I say, it's funny, I said earlier that I'd like to just move to Montana or Wisconsin or whatever and live in a cabin and eat popcorn. Okay, the one thing that I won't, the one thing that will bring me back in when it's necessary is if communication ever breaks down between the individual party members, Joe America in you know, Tallahassee, Florida, has a question about, you know, our thoughts on you know, Common Core. Somebody needs to answer that question directly to that particular person. No form letters, no, thank you for your interest, you know, due to volume,
yeah.
No, bull, okay, let's figure it out. Let's communicate. This is 2016. We have the ways to communicate with people, okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, time is running down for this segment of our program, but the game plan going forward in my mind is that, JD, that we get back together with you that week after the election, and you're going to be formally launching this, then we want to have you back on. We want to reintroduce it to our audience at that time, which should be considerably larger, and get people acquainted with the mechanics of how to become involved at the grassroots level. And in the meantime, we'll keep in touch with each other and do a little bit of cross promotion, because I know I can speak on behalf of Open Rebellion. This is something we want to partner with you on. It's a direction that we want to be heading ourselves. So thank you so much for your time this evening.
Absolutely. Richard, Dina, thank you guys for having me. Michael, thank you for the question. Email me.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm sure he will. Okay, thanks so much, and we're going to take off, and we'll be back with you on Thursday, and Dina's going to kind of just set the stage a little bit for what we have on tap for Thursday evening.
Thursday, we are having Jay Griffin. And he basically did a fast last time that was sort of viral in order to get people involved in what's going on in this country, kind of turn our minds and hearts towards God. He's doing another one, and so we're going to talk to him about that and how we can become more Christ-like in our country and how we can all take that time to be better Christians and just become a better nation. So we're going to be talking to him. And then
on
the 27th, we're having a Halloween party, sort of, if we get people to come. Right now, we're looking for people who are musicians and comedians to send us their samples, and we will have that 2 hours be just full of fun, and it should be really good. So if you are a musician or you're a comedian, send it to DENALEICHNITZ@MadisonCTC.com, and we'll get back to you.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday night. Good night.
Okay.